Hello and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. With me today is Kate Baker. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great to finally to connect up with you for the podcast. So Kate, you started out with Pathfinder, doing some having some credits there. But where I know you mostly from has been Starfinder Society Scenario 108, The Sanctuary of Drowned Delight, where you introduced the Space Walrus. And since then, you've also have a brand new Adventure Path book from Attack of the Swarm Volume 4, the Forever Reliquary. That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm so excited that that is just releasing.
Yeah, I just got my copy yesterday, so I'm fortunate. I get my stuff hand-delivered, so I get it pretty quick, and I don't pay for shipping.
nice.
Yeah, also, you are a venture agent in the Bay Area and a 3-star in 3Nova GM. That's really cool. Do you GM much now, or are you spending a lot of time freelancing?
It's always a balance. So I do still GM, but I also have to save time for writing. So,
right. Yeah, it's a lot.
It'll probably be a while until I hit 5 Novas. But
yeah, it's we have 2 5-Nova GMs as far as I know now. So Natalie Kirchner and Gary Norton. Mm-hmm. And a couple other people close, but it's hard. It's hard to hit all those check marks, you know.
It is so many games and so many specials. Mm-hmm.
So you began writing on the Pathfinder side of things for Paizo, and more recently, I guess in the last couple of years, transitioned over Starfinder. Kind of what was the impetus behind that?
Yeah, so I do still write for both product lines, for Pathfinder and Starfinder. So if we go back to Gen Con, this would be... Gen Con 2017, I guess, when Starfinder launched, I was there running demos of the new system. And I had done a couple of Paizo products at that point, Potions and Poisons, a Pathfinder Player Companion, and InterSiege Havard.
Right.
I think I was still working on that. So I'd done a few projects, and... because I was running this new system so much, I was one of the folks in the demo hall running games, that kind of put me in a good position to get some Starfinder work. So I then got contracted to do a section for Armory, and that is when I got assigned 108 for Starfinder Society.
Wow. So you had you done any scenarios on the Pathfinder side prior?
I had not.
Wow, so just basically book credits and then right to a scenario. That's actually, I think that's a little unusual, isn't it?
It is. I think because I didn't do a quest or something first.
Right.
I think basically a big part of that was that I had gotten really early familiarity with Starfinder.
Right.
So while I hadn't written an adventure previously, I was coming in as somebody who had already run a lot of Starfinder for the public. So I think that was part of being able to get that assignment when I did.
And there weren't a lot of Starfinder experts at the time outside of Paizo, I imagine, too. So
exactly, yeah.
Right. So your Morlamar is... a fan favorite, what was the inspiration for this multicolored space walrus?
Yeah, so for that adventure, believe it or not, the word walrus did not appear anywhere in the initial outline. I think my first outline, I actually referred to them as fish people throughout because I didn't really know what I was going to do yet. My assignment from Thurston was that I needed to create a new aquatic creature, and that they needed to be sufficiently different from the other aquatic creatures who were in the game already, so the Kalos and the Riku Cheese, and I think there's another one. So, for example, those are all, like, kind of humanoid bipedal-shaped creatures, and so it was like, we'll do something that's different. So I was looking at, actually had a page of, you know, different brainstorming on, like, what could I maybe base a creature on that would look different? Mm-hmm. And I had thought about, like, a sea serpent kind of thing, but, you know, I was like, well, that's just kind of a Naga. Those are already a thing, and looking at some crustacean or lobster kind of things, and wasn't really loving that. And I stumbled on walruses, and I liked them for a few reasons. I definitely had in mind, like, the poem of the walrus and the carpenter, because it makes walruses seem a little bit ominous, and right, I sort of wanted that undertone, even as I was making them very, like, colorful and fun, so that you would maybe get a little bit of a sense of something's amiss here, which is what happens in that scenario.
Right, right. Yeah, that's it's kind of interesting. When that came out, like, Ark Riley at PaizoCon sponsored an all walrus party, and it was like all the rage, right? Everybody was all excited. Why do you think the walrus became so popular, other than it's a large creature with reach that you could play?
Yeah, I mean, I think just, and this is a scenario reward spoiler for anybody listening.
Yeah.
I think it was a kind of just a novelty to start with, that they, that of something that was unique to Starfinder Society versus, you know, Pathfinder Society, is this idea of, like, going to this planet and meeting these people and then potentially getting them to join the society, and then maybe you could play one of them. There's been a few scenarios like that since, but that was kind of the first one of, like,
right.
Here's this brand new creature, and, oh, by the way, you can be one. So I think part of it was just getting to be the first that you could access that way.
Was there any pushback on making it a walrus, or was all the developers really excited by the fact that we're going to have these rainbow walruses?
You know, I mean, I was working with Thirsty and pitched it to him, and he was for going for it, even though they're a little weird. So, yeah.
All right, it's kind of neat that they give you even though they give you an outline with the basics of what they want, the developers still give you a lot of free rein for creativity. So that's kind of cool to see.
I feel pretty confident that nobody would have turned in exactly the same thing that I did.
Probably not. I heard a rumor, and this is from a couple of folks at Paizo, that the Society may be going back to that same lodge in the near future with another scenario written by Kate Baker. Does that sound like it might be correct?
Yes. So Thurston broke that news on some other podcasts. So I can confirm that there is another Morlamot adventure coming up. Sort of sequel to the first one. So you'll get to find out what they've been doing in the meantime. They also got a write-up that I did in Alien Archive 3.
Oh, right,
so
you
can also get more Morlamot information there.
Yeah, that was really cool. There was a blog post that kind of profiled a bunch of authors, yourself and Hillary, that had contributed to that. And it was kind of neat to see that process, how they brought in new folks to do things. And I didn't realize that they didn't fully develop these races, you know, like in a format like Alien Archive, before they put them in a scenario. I didn't know that. Oh, you just kind of created that, and then, you know, I just assumed it was already developed and put in. So it was kind of neat to see that that difference there as well.
Yeah, and I actually didn't even know ahead of time that they were going to end up with being a playable race, that they would have stats for that.
Oh, you didn't that put
was,
that? That wasn't
something
part
that
of
Thurston
it.
Added.
Oh.
No, they were just a creature you were meeting. That was very much something that Thurston added, and that made it really fun, and that people liked it. So.
No, that's awesome. So when you got your, like, author's copy of the PDF or something, that's the first time that you knew that they would be playable.
He actually had pinged me ahead of time to get some extra information about them.
Oh, okay.
To be able to write it up. So I did know ahead of time, but it was not what I submitted.
Yeah. No, that's really cool.
Yeah. So the fact that they like to stand in lines is for me.
So you've done quite a bit now already, you know, with a couple scenarios in the works, an AP, some book credits and whatnot. What advice do you have for folks that want to break into writing, you know, in any RPG, but in particular for Paizo?
Yeah, so, you know, the best thing to do is get started writing. The time period just ended for Wayfinder submissions, but, you know, whenever you are listening to this, because it will be recording forever, Wayfinder is a fan-run zine, and the open call that just ended and last year's were both Starfinder. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if there are some Pathfinder ones again in the future with Pathfinder 2nd Edition. But that's a great way to get your start. I will, if it's okay, to promote a group that I'm in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Freelance Forge.
Yep.
And the URL for that is freelanceforge.boards.net. And we are a community of RPG freelancers and kind of try to help people get started. The best advice I can give is look for basically anything you can write on, you know.
Right.
Look for those open calls, look for contests. Mm-hmm. You know, look for it. You can start pitching publishers. Never send an unsolicited, like, fully developed pitch.
Right.
But if there's, you know, especially like a third party publisher where you like their stuff, you know, shoot them an email and be like, hey, I really like, you know, your products. Do you need freelancers? And see what they say, because lots of publishers are always on the lookout for new writers.
Yeah. Have you submitted stuff to Wayfinder in the past and had it published there?
I did. I was in the very first time I got to see anything I wrote in print was for the Numeria issue of Wayfinder.
Mm-hmm. And did that help get you a couple gigs with Paizo, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I had that. I did a few Swords for Hire contests. I did a few third-party things. So it was sort of being able to point to this history of, here are things I have written, showing that I can, you know, kind of take and complete assignments, mm-hmm. that they can go read the stuff that I've written and be like, oh, yeah, okay, so this is how our writing is. So having a publication history, however you can get it together, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And so what's the future hold for Kate?
Yeah, well, I'm very excited that my second adventure path will be coming out this spring. That is part of Siege of the Dinosaurs, which is book 4 of the Extinction Curse adventure path.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
And so are you doing more writing for Pathfinder 2nd Edition as well, I'm guessing, then?
I am also writing for Pathfinder 2nd Edition. Mm-hmm. I write for both that and Starfinder. I thoroughly enjoy both systems. So,
yeah, how have you found 2nd Edition? Have you played much of it?
I have, yeah. I was running demos of that this Gen Con.
Right,
Gen Con. And I do local society play, and I'm in a Bald Blakestone game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. I think that the three-action economy is brilliant. I love how easy and elegant that makes gameplay, rather than having the sort of, you know, well, I have this move action left, but I don't have anything I want to do with a move action, you know, and so it's three actions.
Right.
Three actions, an action is an action. So I think that is really fun. I've enjoyed playing it.
Yeah, I think I've started playing Age of Ashes with my local group. We had primarily been Starfinder players, but with the second edition coming out, we thought we'd give it a shot. And I'm amazed at how a lot of the neat things they've done with proficiencies and skills and all kinds of things. So it has a similar flavor to Pathfinder First Edition and Starfinder, but really is, I think, brought it in and simplified it in a lot of ways. And again, I like the three action economy as well. I think it's really pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So,
It opens a lot of fun things for designers and developers to get to work with. So.
Yeah, but it's another whole system to learn in terms of for writing and designing.
Is,
so
yeah.
that's more work. How many hours do you put in freelancing, if I can ask, in a given week?
It varies a bit. Certainly, something like an adventure path is the most time intensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm, certainly 10 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
Other weeks it's going to be less than that.
Mm-hmm. So less than a part-time job, but
yeah,
still pretty substantial.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Kate, thanks so much for being with us on the podcast. I really appreciate it. Best of luck. And hopefully we'll see you at a future con, at least PaizaCon, but maybe down, in the Bay Area again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.